Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Just to remind you, our next outside broadcast is this day week. That's the 25th of October in Lawler's Hotel in Naas, in the courtroom there, with thanks to our friends in Marks and Spencer's. There'll be music, chat, movies and booze. And if you'd like to register for tickets, newstalk.com/events. You have to be 18 or over to come along and do it quickly, because they usually go pretty quick. That's in Lawler's Hotel in Naas next Friday, this day week. We are joined in the studio by Fionnuala Jones, Deirdre Malumbi and Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Hi guys.
So we're doing Oktoberfest beers, Dean, when Oktoberfest is over.
Well, no, we aren't doing Oktoberfest beers, because that would be a Märzen. We're doing German beers because we're just out of Oktoberfest and we're doing Weizenbock.
Okay. And would coming out of Oktoberfest, would that not traditionally be a time where people lie in a darkened room for a few weeks and don't look at
them? There are various periods of the year where that happens.
Yes. and these two particular beers are they sound very like beefy,
yeah,
from the name.
They are. They're both 7.1%, so they fall into a category of beer called Stark beer in Germany. The Germans have terms for beers in terms of their strength. So you have Stark beer, which is the stronger ones, beer, which are the standard strength. Then they've got Schank beer, Einfach beer, and alcohol free, which is obviously alcohol free.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of upper end for Germans, but 7.1% ABV. And yeah, we'll be having a chat about the style and also about how labels are sometimes confusing, but the style should be helpful. It isn't always helpful.
Yeah.
So I got to taste a beer a few months ago that was in this style, but it was a Batuan Harvest Ale on a Star Wars lounge on a Disney cruise ship.
As you do. Yes. Yeah.
And it would appear that some Germans have colonized Batu because it was a Weizenbock.
Right.
So the only explanation is that some German people have gone over to Batu and set up a brewery and are brewing Batu and Harvest Ale.
Right.
On the planet Batu in the Star Wars universe. Right.
Okay. Was that exciting?
It was very exciting. Yeah. It was a nerd off the limit. It was
my nerdolator is going off the charts.
On my honeymoon, I went to a Star Trek experience in Vegas with my wife, and you could divide everybody into the, yes, it's a Star Trek experience, and the, oh God, on Almighty, what am I doing here? You know, very much so. She was in the, oh my God, almighty, what am I doing here?
Which is not in the category of, is this our honeymoon? Have I made a terrible mistake? And how can you make, now, The Apprentice, obviously, big film of the week, Donald Trump. How can you make a film in an election year and it not sound like, you know, a dig at Donald Trump? How can you make a film about Donald Trump that presents him as a fully rounded human being?
Yeah, and it's an interesting one, to be honest, because I think that the director of this is Ali Abbasi, who would be known for like Shelley, Border, Holy Spider and The Last of Us. And I think that in terms of his direction, he was trying to go so far away from Donald Trump as like kind of a caricature that it almost seems like more surreal than seeing like the Trump that we know in real life with all his bravado and all of his obnoxiousness. But it's an interesting kind of character study, I suppose. I wasn't sure if I always totally bought it, but I think that Sebastian Stan, what he's doing with his performance here is really interesting. I think he's had actually a really interesting career since all the like Marvel stuff. He's choosing some really interesting roles that I'm looking forward to getting into.
Okay, yeah. And the second film today is Kathleen is here. We're thinking of renaming this the Peter Coonan slot, because he was in the second film last week as well. He needs a few days off.
That's just it. Yeah. And I remember going through a phase of like I was talking about movies for a few weeks in a row, and it always felt like Leslie Manville was in every single movie I was talking about. So sometimes that just happens, that actors end up, I don't know if they do get a break in between these films or they just end up all releasing all at the same time. But yeah, I mean, it's good. Like, people be working, you know?
Yeah. OK. Not a rave, D. No.
I did really enjoy this film, and I'm looking forward to talking about it as well. Directorial debut of Eva Berthes, actually, an actress who people might recognise from Bad Sisters and Amber.
Yes.
So interesting to see her, you know, sitting in the director's chair this time around.
Yeah, good for her. Yeah. Now, this is exciting. Is there going to be a Pride and Prejudice universe, like the Marvel universe, where, you know, people die or there's parallel Pride and Prejudices?
That I would kind of enjoy, but I don't think that's what's going to be happening, unfortunately. I talked last week about the Netflix adaptation that's coming from that writer whose name is escaping me now. We were talking about casting for potential Mr. Darcy's and all that jazz. But there's been lots of rumours swirling around who would be Elizabeth, the lead role in this Netflix adaptation. And apparently the hot name is Daisy Edgar-Jones, which I think actually makes quite a lot of sense, and I think she would be very good. Apparently her reps have said no. Well, they've said no decisions have been made, which isn't a no. We'll wait to see about that. But on the topic of kind of parallel universes and other things, Dolly Alderton is the writer who is doing this Pride and Prejudice series on Netflix. It came to me eventually. The BBC are actually working on their own Pride and Prejudice spin-off about one of the other sisters, like Lizzie's other unremarkable sister, they call her. It's called The Other Bennet Sister. It's going to be a 10-part drama, and it focuses on Mary Bennet, Lizzie's supposedly unremarkable sister, and the middle Bennet daughter that is typically overlooked. So it's basically about just the one in the middle who nobody cares about, which doesn't really bode well for the series you're going to watch.
But will Elizabeth have a role in that, even if it's in the background?
You'd imagine, I'd say so. Yeah, so we could have, again, two contesting portrayals of Elizabeth going against each other.
Could Daisy Edgar-Jones do both of them?
Could
for
she
consistency?
Do both?
It would be a brilliant stunt.
I doubt they will go with that though, because then it's more, if you have the two opposing actors, you get the whole thing of like comparing the portrayals and stuff like that, especially given the most recent adaptation with Keira Knightley and Matthew McFadyen is so like burned in people's minds and has been done so well. Now, Netflix has kind of a spotty history with adapting and doing Jane Austen stuff. I think they've done something in 2022, Persuasion, is that what it's called?
And I think that had been Johnson.
Had been kind of divisive. So we'll see how this goes. I don't know.
Someone says they should call it Pride and Prejudice. Because there's more of them. Prejudice.
Yep.
The Joker is a turkey.
Yeah, unsurprising. Well, look, to be honest, did I ever think this film was going to be good or critically reviewed? Well, no. But I thought people would go out in their droves for the Lady Gaga of it all, the morbid curiosity of it all. But that hasn't even happened. It's on course for a $200 million loss. It's looking at, like, it's going to streaming early to try and recoup some of its losses for people to rent it out. And basically people are trying to figure out, like, why it went so wrong, essentially. And the thing, like, what people are saying is basically Todd Phillips, the director, because the first one did so well and it wasn't really expected to do well, like critically people going, making money in terms of stuff like that, he basically then kind of went into this and didn't want to listen to any of the DC heads and wanted to make this film in the way he did that has proven to be so divisive, and people are reckoning that's why, because it was just like he would not listen to anyone else in the room. He had such a singular vision for this film that ended up being like floppy, as we've since learned. So
is it just that, maybe just the film was just garbage?
Well, I think from any full point disclosure, like, I still have not seen it, but even based from people like from people who I trust who've seen it, from people who are like Lady Gaga-holics who would have apologised for anything who went and saw it. Mm. Like, it just seems to have not been good as well. I think that's a factor. And I think once you have all these poor reviews, obviously you're not going to go out and see a film. You know what I mean? Like, even out of morbid curiosity. It doesn't even have the thing of being, you know, so bad it's good or like camp. It just seems to have been.
And because it's so up itself as well, that this is like the Orty DC universe thing.
Yeah, kind of. Like, Todd Phillips really wanted to, like, now James Gunn and all them have come out and been supportive of it publicly, but it seems to have been like Todd Phillips wanted nothing to do with them and wanted this to be his own thing. And as we all know, the film kind of seems to be a bit of a middle finger to the fan base. So again, you can imagine anyone who is a fan going, you're immediately alienating them, and they're not going to tell someone else to be like, you should see The Joker. And also, I think the fact that it was a musical, if you don't like musicals, you're automatically not going to give this a chance immediately. But like, when you consider how much it costs to produce and promote, like 300 million, like, it's flopped harder than I think people thought, you know, like, that's a huge loss financially.
That means there won't be a Joker, you know, trequel.
Todd Phillips had said he was never going to do that one. He said the universe ends with this. Now, could there be something with Harley?
Is that his call?
Well, I mean, it's probably not. It's probably partially his call, but the thing is, now also lost the money, so I can't see them scrambling to go back, especially when DC is in such a state of flux as it is. You've such big properties coming out already, like the new Superman and stuff like that, that I'd say they'll want to like prioritise that as opposed to being like, we'll give Todd another go at the Joker, will we? Or we'll have a dark singing Harley Quinn film, you know? Yeah, even though I think Gaga doesn't want to do another one now either. I think Gaga is embarrassed by it all now as well. So.
Okay, right. That's the end of that. So let's drink a beer to the demise of the Joker. or at least the Joker series that we were threatened with.
So this is a Jeff's Bavarian Ale. Now, chatting a little bit about the Weizenbock style, and we've had it a little bit on the show sometimes where we've talked about styles, and then as I'm talking about the style, what's on the label doesn't necessarily describe the style, or, you know, it's not clear that the beer fits in this style. This is an example of this. It's described as a Bavarian Ale. It is a Bavarian ale insofar as it's brewed in Franconia, which is northern Bavaria,
And
it is an ale.
All right.
But there isn't really a style called Bavarian ale, and this fits into the Weizenbock style. So, you know, you might kind of look and say, well, is it a Bavarian ale? Is it a Weizenbock? It is a Weizenbock as a style. They haven't specified that on the label. Now, in terms of the style itself is kind of straightforward insofar as, and we're going to talk Venn diagrams here, because when you're drinking a beer, you really need to
do Venn diagrams. It's always my first urge.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that and reading an encyclopedia before drinking a beer are the two things that really give me excitement. but what you've got is you've got a wheat being used in brewing the beer. You've got it as a strong beer at 7.1%. And then it uses a wheat ale yeast. And then you've got the intersection of the three of those being the Weizenbock style. Mm. So with that, you get some kind of classic flavours that are associated with wheat beer. So the two flavours that are most associated with wheat beer is banana and clove. So you get that, but the banana is kind of developed a little bit. You get kind of soft fruit flavours, peach, apricot. Mm. The clove comes about because the type of yeast that's used in brewing wheat beers is a type of yeast that produces fruity flavours, but it also produces spicy flavours. So you get flavours like clove, but then you can get other flavours as well, which again are in this nutmeg or white pepper. And it's quite a chewy beer. It reminds me of a dessert called Bananas Foster, which is basically...
Yes. Banana-y, I love it.
Yeah, if you slice bananas and then you kind of cook and flambe the bananas in a caramelised sugar syrup with alcohol. And you've got that kind of banana, a little bit of kind of vanilla character to it. You've got the alcohol warming, the spice complements that. There's a caramel character to it. That caramel develops into a kind of a burnt sugar flavour, which develops a little bit further into kind of almost a cigar type aroma. So kind of slightly sweet cigar aroma. Really chewy beer, absolutely delicious beer. This is a style that I really, really like. It's very, very good.
Just going back to the bananas Foster again, do you just eat the banana by itself? Or
it's like a dessert. It's kind of served in a bowl and you have kind of caramelised sugar with bananas flambéed. They put alcohol over it and flambé the alcohol. And you've got all of the flavours that you associate with bananas Foster.
Oh yeah, that's your five a day there. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a delicious beer.
It's so good. Oh my God.
Delicious beer, but you'd know it's 7% or the same, which I think is a good thing generally, because it's when you don't know and it feels like it's 3.5%.
There's a weird thing in the States where in some states they make it against the law to put the alcohol content on the bottle.
What?
And the logic of it is that if you're putting the alcohol content, it's because people will start looking for stronger beers and buy the beer because of the alcohol content. The idea that you would just move from beer to whiskey, you know, where you can go up by a factor of 10 in alcohol content hasn't seemed to occur to them. And they think that it's a great idea, not in all states, but in some states. So you have people going in looking for a bottle of beer and they end up coming out with something that's 12, 14% and they don't know it's 12 or 14% and they're drinking it and like it's achieving exactly the opposite of what it should be achieving.
Gosh, yeah. Gavin has texted in to say Roy Keane is on the record stating that he saw the new Joker film and he enjoyed it. Make of that what you will.
I mean,
he's entitled to his own opinion.
He is. He sure is.
Yeah.
Would I be trusting him with an opinion? I don't know.
Maybe he's a fan of the musical.
Maybe that's it.
He was able to see it for what it was. Yeah. Every time Daisy Edgar-Jones is mentioned, says another texter, should be acknowledged that she had the best Irish accent ever. So often critics focus on the bad Irish accent, like those of Tom Cruise and Julia Roberts, but Daisy proved that a good accent is possible, which is a very fair point.
Agreed.
Yes. She's very good. Is she the best ever Irish accent, though? It is hard to think of good examples. We have so many bad examples.
Yeah, they're drowned out by the bad examples.
She's definitely in the top three, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if anyone can think of any other examples, please text in with them. Anyway, speaking of the best ever biopic ever, everybody says so. Do you want to go with that one first?
The Apprentice?
Yes. Which you thought was the other film.
You know, I should have talked to Dad before announcing the Commodore.
He'll be convinced when he reads about it in the Times, okay?
Well,
you create your own reality.
It's not that easy.
Truth is a malleable thing.
But
these are too tight, I think.
All right, well,
you have kind of a big ass. You know that? You got to work on that.
We try something else.
My dad is tough, boy. He's very tough.
Well, that's why you got to spread the news like it's already happening.
No, it's just you can't push him around very easily.
Fine. Okay, fine. Then, let him push you around. Is that what you want?
No, I don't.
Look. Very, very fine fabric, Brioni.
What is that, merino wool?
Looks expensive.
How much is this?
$1,100.
Okay, that's...
Okay, we'll take it. And matching shirt and tie.
I can't pay for
Forget
this.
Forget it, okay? Forget it. Listen, here.
Help me with this. Let's see.
I don't need your money. You'll pay me back with your friendship, okay? Quid pro quo. You'll be a friend to me, I'll be a friend to you. Okay, that's the pact, okay?
There you go. That's The Apprentice. And I assumed you that was Roy Cohen there saying you create your own reality. So they can't help making nods for what's going on now.
Yeah, that's just it. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of one of the key dynamics in this movie is the relationship between Trump and Cohen. And Cohen is kind of mentoring Trump to say all the right things, wear the right clothes, have the right attitude. And he kind of brings him into this world of like wealth and extravagance that Trump is sometimes fascinated by and sometimes repulsed by. So it's an interesting kind of dynamic that's at the core of this movie. And you've got Sebastian Stan playing Trump. And, you know, in the role of Roy Kahn, you've got Jeremy Strong in a very kind of Succession-esque type of role, yeah. I would say. But I should probably get to the heart of it because I'm sure everyone is very curious about how Sebastian Stan does at playing Donald Trump. And he's very much going for something a lot more subtle than, say, you know, Alec Baldwin's SNL impersonation of Trump. So I liked Stan's performance here. I thought it was really interesting. He's not quite trying to make Trump likable, but he is trying to infuse him with kind of a bit of humanity, for example. Like, he's quite clumsy as a character, and we see him become totally besotted with Ivana, who is played in the film by Maria Bakalova. So I suppose you get kind of drawn into the story that way. And Stan, in kind of portraying Donald, he's capturing certain characteristics of him, like the way he walks, certain mannerisms, the way he speaks, without kind of making him an all-out caricature. Like, if anything, the real-life Donald Trump seems very much more caricature-like by comparison. And it's interesting as well the way the film initially sets up Donald Trump as this character who's not really in his comfort zone. He hasn't quite found that persona yet. And I personally found the second half of the film, when we start to see Trump become kind of more cutthroat and menacing, far more interesting than the first half of the movie, which is basically looking at Trump kind of exploring these business and real estate ventures. He's going about acquiring the building that will become Trump Tower. And I did really enjoy seeing like the development of the relationships between him and Cohen and him and Ivana here. But I couldn't help with the first half of this film being reminded of, you know, The Big Short and how they're trying to explain all these big financial and business matters. And I watched that film being like, I'm sorry, but Margot Robbie being in a bathtub does not help me understand these big complex things anymore. Still don't know what the heck is going on. And that's how I kind of felt watching the first half of this movie. Whereas the second half, when it gets into kind of the more psychological, like character study stuff, I enjoyed that a lot more anyway, personally.
Yeah. So in the first half, are they explaining complex financial terms, or is it you don't get why anyone is doing anything?
I just didn't get what was going on, to be honest. Like, they were trying to talk about like Trump trying to get around these like tax breaks, and it gets into kind of the legalities of him kind of acquiring this building and everything. And then we're also seeing like Cohen kind of bring him into this like extravagant world. Like, he brings him to like this orgy party at one point in the film. So I kind of preferred when it was getting into the more comedy aspects, whereas like I just didn't really get the business and real estate stuff. And that's just something I've never like personally been interested in. So I just wasn't invested when it was getting into those kind of matters, I suppose.
Did it explain, because even we heard from the clip there that Roy Cohen was like buying him suits and stuff.
Yeah,
why Cohen was doing all this, and was it a worthwhile investment for him?
I think that the way the film is kind of implying, I suppose, that Trump became the man he is largely because of Cohn kind of molding him, you know, into the Donald Trump who we sort of know now. And even like his initial relationship with Ivana, and very clever casting there, I have to say, for Marie Bakalova. And I'm not sure if this is intentional, but I was kind of remembering her very infamous encounter with another one of Trump's former lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, in Borat 2. And I was kind of wondering if there was a bit of a like wink there to the audience about that, or maybe I'm just way overreading into the casting here, but she was like phenomenal too in this movie as well. I really liked her performance. So I suppose it's about those kind of relationships and how he ended up just becoming kind of this more sinister character that we now like associate
him
with.
Yeah, that's interesting. So but when we meet Cohen then, and do they give much of his backstory? Because, you know, one could you know, he's the Dr. Evil, really, both in the film and real life.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of just dropped into this story, I suppose, and kind of the 70s, 80s era is when this film is largely set. And Cohn is portrayed as this very eccentric individual. We see him kind of doing these exercises in his boxer shorts, and he has this strange, like, porcelain frog collection at one point in the film. So it's just, yeah, it's a bit kind of surreal. But I suppose that's another part of the film that's quite enjoyable. It is when it gets to those more kind of comedic aspects. There's another scene later in the film where Trump goes into see a doctor, and he's kind of spouting about how exercise is actually like really, really terrible for you. So again, we're getting that kind of Trump we know, with kind of this medical misinformation. Please don't take anything this guy says when it comes to medical matters to heart. But I would have liked a bit more of the comedy. I don't know if it always worked for me in terms of balancing those humorous aspects and the ruthlessness. It didn't, just for me personally, it didn't like gel together as well as I was kind of hoping. It was almost like they were so focused on the character of Trump and making sure that he did seem like a real person until he kind of develops into something that's a bit more kind of sinister and like twirling his, you know, mustache evil, like that you actually believe in. But I'm not sure if I always believed in it, to be honest.
Yeah. At what stage does it end? No spoilers, but what stage of Trump's life story does it end?
It's kind of when he's like starting to do like, you know, the interviews around the tower and like speaking with a lot of bravado. It's very different to the character who we initially meet. He's like quite quiet, and he's kind of like watching Cohn from like the corner of a bar, hoping that this guy, you know, like takes him under his wing and stuff like that. So very different kind of character. And even like the final shot of the film, don't worry, this isn't giving anything away, he's kind of like looking out the window to, you know, I suppose the future and everything.
Really? I wonder what that means.
I wonder what was to come. And obviously there is the conversation of like, and have you ever considered, you know, running for office? That is obviously brought in at some point in the movie.
Is his father mentioned in it?
Yeah, his father plays like quite a big role in it. Sorry, I forgot to write down who's the actor that plays him. But yeah, I have it here. Martin Donovan. So that relationship is explored as well, but probably not in as much detail as his relationships with Ivana and Cohn. But it's an interesting one.
Yeah. Because, well, I suppose in a lot of, you know, things written about the real Trump, the father seems to, or a need to emulate the father's success or seek the father's approval.
And I suppose there's also that film kind of generic thing of like, you have to have the failed father character in there. And then Cohn is kind of this alternative stand-in father. So you get into those kind of like filmy necessary aspects as well. I'm not sure that the film always entirely knew what it was doing or what it was trying to get across. But I do appreciate it, like A for effort, certainly. Like it's an interesting film. I wouldn't be kind of rushing out to see it in the cinema. And I do always worry about the whole, you know how they say, even if you're talking about someone negatively, you shouldn't be talking about them at all, because by giving them that like energy and attention, that's not a good thing either in terms of like manifestation and all of that. So that's also like a concern of mine.
Yeah. Well, it would just strike me as extremely difficult, given that the entire world probably has an opinion on Donald Trump, and it's probably quite a strong opinion. It must be even more difficult to create a story about him and keep that point of, you know, keep that opinion at bay.
Yeah. And I suppose the film like tried to do that by having it like, you know, set in the past, like this would have been set kind of about, you know, 40 years ago. But there's still that kind of intimacy there that's kind of too close for comfort, you know.
Somebody thinks that Donald Trump would look hot with a moustache.
Oh, for God's sake.
Wouldn't it would go well against the orange, I suppose. A bit of contrast with the orange. Someone says, I loved the Joker movie. I didn't expect it to be a Marvel follow-up per se. Phoenix was brilliant in it. I think how they communicated through song was actually very interesting, as they are both in an asylum. Gaga did good too. But this was all about Arthur, not Joker. So if you see it with that in mind, you're going to understand it better. Says a texter. Neil says, went to see Joker 2 weeks ago. Wasn't expecting much due to poor reviews. Then why did you go, Neil? both myself and my wife thought it was fantastic. 9 out of 10. Plus, we're not musical lovers.
Okay.
Well, so there you go.
There are two people who liked Joker 2. Yeah. Found them.
As for non-Irish accent actors and accents... Obviously, everyone's voting for Brad Pitt in Snatch. That was a fantastic accent. I'm assuming they're all joking.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Kate Blanchett and Veronica Guerin had a brilliant Irish accent.
She was pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like Daisy is better than her, though. Maybe I give Daisy better than
Kate. Okay, so we'll rate everything against the Daisy-ometer.
Okay.
Judi Dench has a very good Irish accent.
I was just thinking of her, yeah.
Superb.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, yeah. Okay. I was remembering that.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is an obscure one. Best Irish accents by Nana is Gillian Anderson in a film set in the North called Man About Dog about 20 years ago. You'd never guess she wasn't Irish.
Okay. I haven't seen it. I will admit. She is very good at accents, though. Like, she's a pro, so.
Steve Coogan does a great Irish accent in Moon Boy.
Again, haven't seen that, so cannot measure against the Daisy-ometer, but.
Yeah, that's going back a while.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Anyway, Spider-Man 4, that's going on longer than the actual Spider-Man franchise.
But it's kind of unsurprising because this is the one that kind of reinvigorated everything, the Tom Holland iterations of the Spider-Man with the new Marvel Universe and stuff like that. We've gotten an update on it. Tom Holland has read a script for this new film and he said they're working very hard on it. Read the script, he said still needs work, but the writers have done a great job. I read it 3 weeks ago and it really lit a fire in me. Day and I sat down and read it together and we at times were bouncing around the living room, which kind of reads like an oxymoron to me, because if the script was great, why would we need to keep working on it? But anyway, this is coming from Shang-Chi director Destin Daniel Cretton. It's a follow-up to the 2021 No Way Home film, which I think kind of ends fairly, without spoilers, again, for a film that came out in 2021, but like where it ends, I don't really know how you follow it up and I kind of don't think they should. But they will, obviously, because it made loads of money. Classic.
Okay. A few more suggestions on who was good at doing Irish accent. One person says Maggie Smith, terrific Irish accent in The Lonely Passion of Judith Hearn.
Okay.
Kate Hudson in About Adam. That
I thought she was good. Yeah.
Still, no, we're not. Still not the best, though.
I still think Daisy and Judi Dench, I think, might be gold and silver. Yeah.
Okay.
There just haven't been a huge number of recent examples. We're going quite far back with these ones.
Northern Irish accent, Roisin Gallagher from the TV show The Dry. Brilliant Southern Irish accent. Actually thought she was from here. Yeah, I don't know if that counts. We disqualify that and as being in the Ireland of Ireland. Thomas Birdie Sangster in The Death of a Superhero. Whoa.
Oh, I've never heard about that.
No.
He is usually a good actor, so I would be intrigued to watch that and see.
Meryl Streep in Dancing at Lunasa. That's going back a while.
Was that good? I haven't seen it in a while. My memory of it doesn't seem like it was maybe not totally terrible, but like I don't remember it being great.
Yeah. Gillian Anderson. Dermot in Waterford says Gillian Anderson is from Northern Ireland. She's not.
Yeah, we had checked that. Sorry.
Yeah, we did.
Sorry, Dermot.
Grand Rapids in Tyrone is where she's from. Robert De Niro's Irish accent in The Irishman was good.
I didn't watch that because it was 5 hours
it
long.
It went on for
it?
17 hours, yes. No, it wasn't that good.
No.
It was all right, was what it was. Let's talk about our second beer today, Dean.
Okay, so the second beer is Eyinger Weizenbock. Now, from a style point of view, it's a little bit easier because it says Weizenbock on the label. So,
okay, that makes it more straightforward.
It does, yeah. You can kind of follow along a little bit easier. Now, this, the BJCP is the Beer Judge Certification Program, and they are the wonderful people that put together descriptions of beer styles. So every few years they update them. So there was a 2015 version. We're working on the 2021 version now. In the BJCP style guidelines, they name out a number of beers as being classic examples of the style. So you could have like 500,000 different versions of Weizenbock around the world. Eyinger Weizenbock is one of the six or eight beers that are picked out as a classic example of a Weizenbock. It is brewed in Bavaria again, in the town of Eying, which is just south of Munich. Absolutely superb Weizenbock. Now, this is an interesting one because what I found with it, we often what we do with the beers is we get a group of people that are qualified beer sommelier together, and we taste the beers as a group. And what I found with this was I was finding individual flavours in it. I was getting banana, vanilla, marshmallow, clove, nutmeg, biscuit, caramel, all there. And then one of the guys came out and said, I'm getting lemon meringue. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Okay. Yeah,
and then I went back at it a second time. And when I came back at it the second time, I got a big whack of lemon meringue, like real lemon curd and the kind of ginger crumb biscuit in it. It's a really interesting beer because it's got all of the elements that you'd expect to be in a Weizenbock. So that kind of fruity banana flavour. The clove spiciness and then the kind of biscuity, bready flavour. As a wheat beer, it has pretty much no hop character. It's relying on the spice for balance. So the white pepper and clove are kind of giving the counterbalance to the sweetness.
But, oh yeah, there's a little bit of, spicy element to it. Yeah, that's true.
But what it is, it's just an incredibly well integrated beer because as you taste it, you get individual flavours and then you find that they kind of reform together in different ways. And each mouthful is almost like a different experience, but absolutely superb beer.
Yeah, and it, more subtle though, I'd say, than the previous one.
Yeah, it's got a little bit more body, but it's one before has kind of a couple of meaty flavours in there. With this, it's incredibly complex and layered and very, very well balanced and comes through with kind of different flavour experiences each time you taste it.
Yeah. Johnny Depp in Chocolat? Was he even Irish in that? I can't remember. No.
I do remember he has a line in it saying, I'm sorry, chocolate. And I remember when I heard that, I was like, that sounds very Irish. That's the exact way that Irish people say chocolate. So we got that right.
You got one word. There you go. Our next movie is Kathleen Is Here. Let's have a listen to, I think this could be the trailer.
Kathleen Carol Dunn. No next of kin. It might feel strange being back here, Kathleen. If you make different choices, things could be a lot better for you.
Hiya. We've just moved in. I'm Dee.
Hi.
You making any friends?
One.
It's weird now being in the house on my own.
If you ever need anything.
Thanks.
Are we taking in waves and strays now?
She's just lonely. I couldn't have managed on my own at her age.
I like your necklace.
It's supposed to make your wishes come true.
You don't know the first thing about her, Dee.
There you go. That is Kathleen Is Here. We did, that's a bit from the trailer. We did, normally the way these things work, we ask for, you know, clips from the PR people. They sent us a clip of somebody walking on the beach. There was no dialogue. And then a clip of somebody sitting on a bus and there was no dialogue. So we could have just stuck the microphone out the window, really. And you're going to be no more the wiser. So, Kathleen Is Here. Obviously, Irish movie. What's the premise?
And I swear it's not all silent.
Yes.
So we follow Kathleen, who's 18 and alone. She's kind of been in the care system for a number of years, but now she's living in her mother's empty house now that her mother has recently passed away. So she's kind of getting these occasional visits from a social worker. She gets a job in a local supermarket because now she kind of has to, you know, live on her own and make a living. She struggles to bond with her colleagues and she's really quite isolated in terms of her current living situation. But she does eventually befriend a new neighbour called Dee, who you would have heard in the clip there, played by Claire Dunn. People recognise her from Kin. And Kathleen's fortunes seem to turn around. You know, these two women do kind of develop this like quite sweet bond. However, things do start to fall apart. Dupe. Hazel Dupe is absolutely fantastic in the role of Kathleen, I have to say. It's quite a like balanced and nuanced role, I think, because she's very childlike. You know, she is just 18 years old and we see her kind of being silly, dancing around the place, messing around, doing makeup. She loves to do Kim Kardashian impressions. So she's quite like sweet, but she also has this like grief in her. There are also hints throughout the movie that there may have been abuse in her past. And I think that Dupe does a really incredible job at carrying the emotional weight of that kind of performance with a lot of grace and deep empathy. And she's also just a very, very lonely character. And you can just tell, even though she never outrightly says it, that she's just longing to be loved. And then on the other hand, you have Claire Dunne in the role of Dee, who gives an absolutely brilliant performance again. She is so kind. She's so generous. You can see how sorry she feels for Kathleen and how every interaction the two characters have together, it kind of seems to mutually lift their spirits. And Dee goes really out of her way to make Kathleen feel cared for. She brings her over for dinner. She lets Kathleen give her a makeover. They go to the salon together, although at this point Dee's very young son kind of throws a tantrum and they have to like leave the store. You know how kids can be. And it's an interesting one because you kind of wonder exactly where the line is in terms of this relationship. And Dee's husband, who's played by Peter Coonan, and her son, while they're not kind of unwelcoming to Kathleen, there's kind of a healthy, I suppose, distance there where it's like Dee and Kathleen are much closer. And I suppose that boundary kind of gets gradually pushed as the film progresses. And I just found it a really interesting film in that it did kind of defy my expectations as I went into it. I was expecting something more of a melodrama. And as I was watching the film, it actually almost turns into a bit of a thriller, which I just didn't see coming at all. So it's a really kind of interesting one. Absolutely fantastic performances by all the actors there, and just so different to anything that's out there, like kind of international wise or Irish film wise.
Can you tell us in what way it turns into a bit of a thriller, or would that be a spoiler?
It's kind of, I don't want to kind of spoil it, but I suppose Kathleen, in terms of like where she is in terms of the relationship, she's kind of pushing boundaries and like crossing the line. Like, for example, we see her at one point kind of comparing her and Dee's like photographs together to see how alike the two really look. She also steals Dee's necklace at one point. So they're kind of just these subtle hints that something a bit kind of strange is going on. And it very much kind of gets under your skin in terms of the buildup of the ambience, in that you're just starting to feel just a little uncomfortable, a little unsettled. And then it just all starts to really go down. So it's very well done that way. I thought it was a really impressive directorial debut from Eva Berthisel, and I really think it's worth checking out.
Okay, sounds great. Yeah. There's a late stage surgeon voting for Charlie Cox.
I was just about to say, when Deirdre said Kane, it came into my mind because he's obviously in that and he does an Irish accent and he's very good.
He is very good in that. Good recent example.
Lily Collins in Love, Rosie.
I've never seen it. It's supposed to be a good film, but
because apparently he was also in Boardwalk Empire, where he did a Northern Ireland accent, so I suppose he get an accent. Mini Driver in Circle of Friends.
No. I don't. That's generous of that person, I think, but no.
Highly. Has anyone beaten?
I don't think Daisy? So. I think no. Daisy, Judi Dench, Charlie Cox.
I think Charlie Cox as well. Kate Blanchett. There.
Yeah. I don't think we have a fifth person, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But does Daisy get the Oscar?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Congratulations, Daisy. A huge boost to your career. No doubt. Fionnuala Dean and Deirdre, thank you all very much.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.